Okay, folks, Pastor Eli James here. There appears to be a problem at Revolution Radio. I tried twice to get on the air there, and their Skype is just not picking up. So I'm just going to go ahead and broadcast today's show strictly on Eurofolk Radio. And hopefully I'll try again during the show today to make contact with them. But if that fails, no problem. We'll just continue on Eurofolk Radio here. The subject for today's show is filibusters and Freemasons. Now, a while back, I did a show on the... Oh, by the way, this is the Restoration Hour, broadcasting exclusively right now on Eurofolk Radio. I'm your host, Pastor Eli James, and I've been doing a long series, I think going on a year now, setting up the true facts behind the American Civil War, who was behind it, to explain why the current, I would call it false paradigm or false dialogue that has been promoted between the neo-abolitionists and the neo-Confederates, both of whom deliberately lie about the true position of Abraham Lincoln and the Republican Party and their true position on race and their true position on, you know, what the reasons were. And filibustering is one of the main reasons why the Republican Party came into existence. Nevertheless, mainstream media utterly ignores the subject of filibustering. And for those who missed that show, filibustering is similar to modern corporations organizing an invasion of a sovereign country for their own purposes, often in the name of the country where they're based in, for example, the United States. And so Halliburton, if Halliburton organized an invasion of Iraq, let's say, and did it on their own prerogative, but claimed to have the auspices of the American government, that would be filibustering. Now, today, the corporations are a little more careful to secure the support of the regime, the Zionist regime that controls the District of Corruption. But in those days, the filibusters were very, very bold in attacking sovereign countries without the support of the federal government. Often, I would say, the state governments winked at it, often looked the other way, and sometimes the people in the state government were in fact in favor of filibustering. And so this topic of filibustering is extremely important. You must know, and this is, of course, exclusive to the South, because only the South was interested in annexing more territory for the cause of slavery. The Knights of the Golden Circle, the group to whom we must attribute much of the creation of the Civil War, the antagonism toward the North, was fostered by the Knights of the Golden Circle, who were a branch of the Freemasons. And, you know, today's subject is filibustering and Freemasonry. Again, another topic that both the neo-abolitionists and the neo-Confederates exclusively avoid, besides the true position of Lincoln and the Republican Party, is the involvement of Jews in the American Civil War and the involvement of Freemasons in the American Civil War. I would have to say that on both sides, there were Freemasons in the North, Freemasons in the South. But generally speaking, the Freemasons of a particular locale were not... well, let's put it this way. Freemasonry was not a universally unified organization. There were constant attempts by the Illuminati to organize all of Freemasonry worldwide under their leadership secretly by infiltration and subversion. And we'll get into that. We'll see that the attempts by the Jews, by the Rothschilds and the Illuminati to totally control Freemasonry America, eventually became exposed because of the attempt to assassinate. In fact, they murdered a man, Captain Morgan, who wrote a book about how the Illuminati was trying to infiltrate American Freemasonry. But the Illuminati wasn't formed until May 1st, 1776, just a few months before the American Revolution. So there's no question that the Illuminati was unable, didn't have time to infiltrate American Freemasonry, which only had 3 degrees up until this point in time. And yes, Washington did officiate at a few of their ceremonies. But he, by his own testimony, he was rarely an attendee at official Freemasonic gatherings, although they would use lodges for other meetings, and often the lodges were nothing but the local pub. So ultimately, they would build their own lodges to which no one else was invited. So this is the involvement of Freemasonry in the history of America has been totally overlooked by mainstream press, by mainstream academia, for obvious reasons. And the basic reason is the same reason that they ignore the Jewish question with regard to the American Civil War, is they don't want you to know the amount of control the Jews have today in our politics, or the Freemasons have today. And if you've been paying attention to our reporting on the child molestation groups, the worldwide child kidnapping, molestation, human sacrifice, Pizzagate story, this is riddled with Freemasons. And many of the kidnappings lead back to Freemasonic lodges around the world. And Stanley Kubrick's last film, Eyes Wide Shut, was actually on this subject, what really goes on, the satanic rituals that go on behind the closed doors of the Freemasonic lodges. By the way, B'nai B'rith is just such a lodge. It's a Jewish lodge exclusively for Jews, and the B'nai B'rith has been nothing but a source of trouble, agitation, and subversion for America for the longest time. And so this is a very important subject, the existence of Freemasonry, especially in the South. And you're going to find out from some of these stories that Freemasons supported each other if they were on the opposite side of the fence politically, which they often were. Nevertheless, if they, for example, chanced to meet each other, let's say a Freemason from the North was in charge of a prison camp somewhere in the South, or even in the North where Southern prisoners were held. If one of the Southern prisoners gave the sign of distress or gave the Freemasonic handshake, then the Northern Freemason was obligated to give that Southern Freemason special treatment, and vice versa. So at least, but this does not mean that that Northern Freemasons would let these guys go. They would just give them better treatment. But if it came to, let's say, the Southern prisoner facing hanging or execution, the Northern Freemason may actually arrange for a way for that Southern Freemason to escape. Okay? So this is the dynamic of Freemasonry during the American Civil War, which very, very few people are aware of, because mainstream media and academia never talk about this subject. I'm going to be quoting from the Journal of the Early Republic, Spring 1997, Volume 17. So this is an official historical journal, and oftentimes to get information on Freemasonry and filibustering, you can't get it from these official journals, certainly not university. But sometimes you'll find that a college student, someone doing a master's thesis or a PhD thesis, will cover this subject. So it's really buried in the archives of the universities, never made public, certainly not on mainstream television, radio, magazines, etc., because this subject is totally hushed up. And because they don't want you to know the extent of the power of the Jews and Freemasons in America and around the world. This article is entitled Filibusters and Freemasons, The Sworn Obligation by Antonia Della Cova. Pardon me for 1 minute. It's 7:11 local time. I'm going to try one more time to connect here with Studio A to see if we can get both Revolution Radio and Eurofolk Radio going here. And it's ringing and ringing and ringing. They should have answered by now. And okay, it won't connect. So I'm just going to continue today on Eurofolk Radio exclusively. Good thing we have this double connection. So here we go, folks. This is the story of filibustering and Freemasonry, The Sworn Obligation, by Antonio Della Cova. From 1848 to 1851, Cuban separatists residing in the United States established organizations, released publications, and mustered four filibuster invasions to overthrow the Spanish colonial government and establish a Cuban republic. Now, this was without the approval of the American government, and sometimes with or without the approval of their state government. They were following the Texas model by using American funds, volunteers, and weapons to achieve independence. Now, of course, this involved the invasion of Spanish-held Cuba by what we can see here is Cuban separatists or people of Spanish citizenship who would organize these invasions and recruiting American volunteers to do the job. And the reason the American volunteers would be interested at all is because they would want to capture Cuba to promote slavery there, to promote their, Knight of the Golden Circle empire. And they would get a cut of the action. Namely, they would get land for their own personal use as slaveholding landowners. That would be their interest, or they would just get paid as soldiers, as ramshackle soldiers of fortune. Because some of these people were bored. Some of these people didn't have jobs. They were just languishing in the hot South. And hey, let's find some action. Who knows what the motivations of any given soldiers of fortune are? This is the type of person who would join such an invasion. Such an organized, of course, even today, what the so-called contractors, the mass media calls them contractors. Well, they're private entrepreneurs, soldiers of fortune, and companies like Halliburton and others can provide soldiers, private soldiers, for just about any invasion, the invasion du jour, whether it be Iraq, Syria, or ISIS. This is the nature of corporate military activities, and this is the light in which filibustering must be seen way back in these days. So they followed the Texas model, by which Sam Houston and Stephen Austin secured the territory of Texas for slavery. I did an entire show about that subject, how they actually, what they did was they set the slaves of Mississippi and other states free only to have them sign contracts to be indentured servants for 99 years, which of course ensured that they would have them as slaves for life. And this is how the state of, or the Republic of Texas, which gained its own independence independently of the United States well before it joined the Union. But this is exactly how Texas was created. It was created by filibustering. The islanders would later decide the question of statehood through a referendum. So they intended to invade Cuba and leave the issue of statehood to a future vote. But nevertheless, the island of Cuba would be secured by military invasion by a private group. Filibuster expeditions led by disgruntled former Spanish Army General Narciso Lopez and his aide-de-camp Ambrosio José González violated the neutrality law of 1818, prohibiting armed enterprises against nations at peace with the United States. Hello! I pointed this out at great length, that filibustering was in violation of American law. Nevertheless, it was quite common for filibustering expeditions to be organized in the South, especially in New Orleans, Charleston, South Carolina, etc. Lopez's attempts to liberate, quote-unquote, liberate Cuba. Now, I mean, no, liberate. Now, that, of course, this is the terminology they use, but it would simply be one slave empire replaced by another. Lopez's attempts to, quote-unquote, liberate Cuba had profound consequences for United States-Spanish relations and the course of Cuban history. Lopez, Gonzalez, and most of the filibuster leadership were Freemasons, who relied extensively on the international fraternity to accomplish their plans. There had been a similar precedent in the creation of the Republic of West Florida in 1810 and the Republic of Texas in 1836. Louisiana Freemasons led the revolt against Spain that proclaimed the 72-day Republic of West Florida, an area that was later annexed to their state. And I remember, of course, Florida was a bone of contention between the United States and the nation of Spain. And the Spanish had recruited Indians to their side, and the Americans had recruited Indians to our side. And it was pretty much like a continuation of the French and Indian Wars, where Indians were recruited on both sides, you know, the British and the French. And the Americans, you know, had to take sides. Of course, the Americans were more, you know, culturally allied with the British. So the Americans went with the British against the French, and much of Canada went with the French. So this must be seen, our attempt to become independent of all of this wrangling between colonial nations made us take choose sides. But here, the windfall of territory to the United States was secured primarily by Freemasonry, what this author is telling us, okay? So, this being the case, you, the listeners, should be aware that this is what was going on, and that Freemasonry played a major role in the creation of many of these Southern states that were secured by Freemasonry, independently filibustering without the approval of the federal government, and in violation of the neutrality law of 1818. So, the author says, Lopez's attempts to liberate Cuba had profound consequences for United States Spanish relations. Indeed. Okay. Okay, there had Louisiana Freemasons led the revolt against Spain that proclaimed the 72-day Republic. In Texas, revolutionary leaders Stephen Austin, Samuel Houston, David G. Burnett, Mirabeau Bonaparte Lamar, William B. Travis, Davy Crockett, James Fannin, and Thomas J. Rusk were all Freemasons. 22 of the 59 delegates to the Texas Independence Convention were Freemasons, as well as all four presidents and four vice presidents of the Texas Republic. I'm assuming he's talking about before Texas became a state. Austin had met in the fall of 1835 with 35 prominent New Orleans Freemasons who planned the liberation of Texas and established a local committee to raise funds and volunteers. This is called filibustering, folks. Filibustering. Privately organized military campaigns. Now, of course, here again, the territory known today as Texas was controlled by the Spanish. But even there, the native Mexicans were unhappy with Mexican rule. So the Texans were exploiting this unhappiness, but were using it to promote a slave state, a slave republic. There's no doubt about this. Austin had met in the fall of 1835 with 35 prominent New Orleans Freemasons who planned the liberation of Texas and established a local committee to raise funds and volunteers. The Cuban revolutionaries tried to emulate this pattern 15 years later. This essay contends that Freemasons dominated the filibuster leadership. Secret Masonic identification facilitated joining the organization. It also provided protection from federal authorities suppressing their activities and rendered aid and comfort to distressed filibusters, as I pointed out on the episode on Mexican filibustering, William Walker being the primary filibuster leader. He was actually supported by Jefferson Davis while Jefferson Davis was Secretary of War. And Jefferson Davis knew that we were violating the Neutrality Treaty of 1818 while he was Secretary of War. So this shows you how powerful the Freemasons were and how powerful the Southern slaveocracy was to circumvent federal law, American law. The fraternity espoused the intellectual rationale justifying the invasion of Cuba. Masonic doctrine emphasized that a member owed it to his country to seek to give her freedom or maintain her in that possession. It made tyranny and usurpation, this is quoting, quote, it made tyranny and usurpation the enemies of the human race, but of course they still promoted slavery. It created a general outlawry of despots and despotisms, temporal and spiritual. So any invader is, of course, going to use flowery rhetoric to justify the invasion. Continuing, unfortunately, Masonic secrecy has clouded the fraternity's instrumentality in filibustering. But we do know that many of the leaders of the South and of the North were Freemasons, and they used Freemasonry as a tool to organize the filibustering invasions. There is a considerable amount of literature on the sectional, political, and diplomatic implications of Cuban filibustering. Again, this is Filibusters and Freemasons, The Sworn Obligation by Antonio de la Cova from the Journal of the American Republic, Spring 1997, Volume 17. The first such work, because there is a lot of historical documentation and you have to scour the archives to find articles and books on the subject because these books aren't properly promoted as they should be. The first such work by Jose Ignacio Rodriguez appeared in Havana in 1900. The next year, Vidal Morales, two Moraleses in his name, director of the Cuban National Archives, wrote a three-volume account of the Cuban independence movement. It depicted Lopez as trying to separate Cuba from Spain by any means, without concern for the future. Herminio Portel Vila then published a three-volume biography of Lopez, portraying him as a pragmatic nationalist fighting for Cuban and Puerto Rican independence, conspiring with former military subordinates in Cuba to stage a pronunciamiento, or garrison revolt, coinciding with his disembarkment. Portel Vila reprinted four Lopez proclamations in Spanish, two entitled To the Spanish Army in Cuba. So here, Lopez was trying to incite a civil war within the Spanish army for the purpose of forming an independent slave state, independent of Spain, that is. And so two entitled To the Spanish Army in Cuba, one To the Lovers of Liberty in Cuba, and one To the Spanish Peninsulars. So that's three. All denounce Spanish despotism and affirm his only object is independence and political liberty, unquote. Of course, openly promoting slavery independent of the Spanish military, a Spanish government, is something they would obviously downplay. The only Lopez document alluding to possible future Cuban annexation to the United States was an English-language broadside, quote, to the soldiers of the liberating expedition of Cuba, unquote. Portel Vila indicated that it was written by a collaborator, since Lopez did not read or speak English. Recent Cuban history of the filibuster era is deficient, as such works rarely include notes or cite new sources. Again, this topic is verboten. American expeditionaries J.C. Davis and Richardson Hardy penned personal accounts of their experiences in 1850. But serious U.S. scholarship on Cuban filibustering awaited Anderson C. Quisenberry's Lopez's Expeditions to Cuba, 1850-1851, which appeared in 1906. It heavily relied on the accounts of Davis and Hardy, mainly focusing on the participation of the Kentuckians. 9 years later, Robert G. Caldwell published the Lopez Expeditions to Cuba, 1848-1851. He utilized Cuban and American primary sources to analyze how the filibuster movement influenced the sectional crisis. Again, these filibustering expeditions were viewed with great alarm in the North and also in the South by non-Freemasons who thought filibustering was criminal enterprise. And it was, of course, declared such by several presidents, even presidents who had been involved in it before becoming president. Caldwell described Lopez as an embittered against Spain, opposing abolition, and desiring Cuban independence. So that is abolition of slavery. Chester Stanley Urban later examined the support given by the New Orleans residents to the Lopez movement by using newspaper accounts and City Hall archives. Well, shows that there was great support for the annexation of Spain in the South. In 1948, Basil Rauch, just there's a good combination of British and German names, Basil Rauch, described the diplomatic implications of filibuster activities in American interest in Cuba, 1848-1855. Relying mostly on the diplomatic correspondence between the United States and Spain, here just to show you that there is a great amount of literature on the subject, but none of it's promoted in the popular genre. Robert E. Mays later, The Southern Dream of a Caribbean Empire, 1854-1861, analyzed the sectional and diplomatic implications of the filibuster era. May followed up this work with a biography of Mississippi Governor John Quitman, who was a Freemason, a member of the Knights of the Golden Circle, and a promoter of slavery and filibustering, describing his role in the movement. Though Charles H. Brown's 1980 study of the filibustering dealt mostly with William Walker's Nicaraguan expeditions, he dedicated several chapters to Cuban matters, which lacked new primary sources. Brown's reliance on the prior works of others was reflected in his repetition of errors found in previous secondary publications. The latest book on this subject, U.S. Expansionism and Cuban Annexationism in the 1850s, by Czech historian Josef Opatrny, is seriously flawed. A recent article by Tom Chafin in the Journal of the Early American Republic described the Lopez expeditions as strictly an annexationist movement, overlooking Cuban historiography and the role of Spanish military conspirators on the island. So there were disgruntled Spanish military people in Cuba who wanted to have their own republic independent of Spain, and of course the filibuster movement was just what the doctor ordered. Despite this accumulation of scholarship, little attention has been given to one of filibustering's most important components, its Masonic connection. Some studies allude to this link, none provide a sustained analysis. Portel Vila noted that Lopez joined the fraternity in Spain and later belonged to Solomon's Lodge No. 1 in Savannah. He mentioned that filibuster leaders Cirilo Villaverde and Henry Theodore Titus were members of a lodge in Jacksonville, Florida. Yet Portel Vila omitted that Gonzalez and Juan Manuel Macias were initiated in Solomon's Lodge No. 1, or that Quitman and other conspirators were also Freemasons. Rauch dedicated half a paragraph to the Masonic connection, citing three sources. That's like a history of the American Revolution citing only one paragraph to George Washington. Masonic participation in the Cuban filibuster movement played an important role, which needs further scholarly analysis. And I made a note here, indeed. This requires further scholarly analysis. Excuse me. By the way, I need to mention that I'm writing a book on this subject entitled The Uncivil War, which details the involvement of Jews and Freemasons, and especially the Knights of the Golden Circle, in the fomenting of the American Civil War, the behind-the-scenes activity that is never promoted in the popular media. Let's continue here. Masonic historiography traced its legendary origins to the building of King Solomon's Temple in Jerusalem. Of course, this is, you know, this is just Masonic propaganda. There, certainly, Masonry doesn't go back that far. However, King Solomon did, in his old age, become quite the rake and violated Yahweh's laws. And it's quite possible that King Solomon, you know, gave energy to such a movement. Nothing in the scriptures about this. And so we have to tread carefully here. Whether we can attribute the origins of Freemasonry to King Solomon is highly speculative, and so I'm not going to assent to Freemasonic legends by allowing such a claim to stand. In any case, certainly King Solomon was a debased character in his later life. Whether he gave rise just to an actual group, or whether the Freemasons are just blowing smoke is a question for someone else to answer. I don't have time to delve into that. Somebody may know more about this than I do. It credited the European stonemasons of the Middle Ages who built castles, cathedrals, and abbeys with reviving the fraternity prior to its public appearance. Now, the Knights of Malta and other groups, there's the Rosicrucians, there's all kinds of secret societies in the Middle Ages that trace their origin to the temple in Jerusalem. There's various groups that went there and found relics, found books, and got their knowledge from the invasion of Jerusalem, the Crusades. There were groups among the Crusaders who did this, and these are probably the people that started Freemasonry, or so-called Knights Templar. And then Freemasons simply continued the tradition of the Knights Templar. So this is the most likely origin of Freemasonry and the Rosicrucians, etc., etc. So let's continue here. He mentioned filibusters Cirillo Villaverde and Henry Theodore Titus, who were members of a lodge in Jacksonville, Florida, and that Quitman was another Freemason, and that many of these Freemasons, there's a record of them joining these various lodges. Freemasonry surfaced in London, England on June 24, 1717, when four secret lodges publicly banded to create the Grand Lodge of Free and Accepted Masons. Recent studies indicate that many of the Masonic rituals, titles, symbols, and traditions evolved from those practiced by the Knights Templar, there you go, of the Crusades, after the Inquisition forced them underground in the 14th century. Now, the term accepted means a person who is not a literal Freemason, has never held a brick or a margin trowel in his hand, or ever done any mortaring of bricks, okay? So an accepted Mason is one who's accepted into the fraternity even though he has not ever done any Freemasonic work, and never built a literal building, in other words, with bricks and mortar. So I think he's absolutely correct here by citing the Knights Templar as being the true origin of the Freemasonic movement. The Grand Lodge of England began issuing charters for the creation of new lodges. But even with this charter, There were Freemasonic lodges being formed independently all over the world because it was like starting an Elks Lodge and you just used the name Freemasonry to be cool, right? So without officially joining the international movement, the vast majority of lodges are of this character, unchartered. The hierarchy of each lodge contains the elected positions of worshipful master, senior warden, junior warden, treasurer, secretary, senior deacon, junior deacon, and tyler, T-Y-L-E-R. A candidate must petition a lodge on his own free will, since the fraternity does not recruit. Admission requirements are being freeborn, a belief in God, and we'll find out that that God is Lucifer, and a disposition toward truth, morality, tolerance, and charitable works, in other words, dedication to the lodge. Applicants are rejected if they are motivated by curiosity. What are you guys really about? Personal gain or social advancement, at least without the approval of the lodge. A petition committee investigates the candidate, who is then approved by the unanimous secret balloting of the lodge members. The newcomer is then subjected during the next few months to the ritual 3 degree. That is, that's where you get the third degree, okay? Giving a person a third degree treatment. 3 degree dramas of Blue Lodge Masonry. So all of this is very secret, although the Masonic lodges are publicly there. Non-members are not invited to join in any of this stuff, although some lodges are open to the public for public inspection. I think the DC Lodge is so open, so of course you don't get to see the torture chambers in the basement, but you know, they'll show you the first floor and all of the fantastic architecture. The initial degree of entered apprentice teaches the tenets of brotherly love. Of course, so do all religions. Relief to the distressed and to be good and true. Or, of course, good and true to the lodge. It also emphasizes the virtues of morality, fortitude, prudence, temperance, and justice. Principles applying to all humanity. Of course, this is just rhetoric designed to bring the person into the fold. The candidate is told, quote, "In whatever country you travel, when you meet a Mason, you will find a brother and a friend who will do all in his power to serve you and who will relieve you should you be poor or in distress to the utmost of his ability and with a ready cheerfulness," unquote. I would say most of the time what is lacking cheerfulness because very often in dealing with Freemasons of the North and the South, especially once the Civil War had gotten underway, it's treason. It would be treason to assist a fellow Freemason under such circumstances. Nevertheless, it did happen when they felt they could get away with it. Mason, okay, the second degree of fellowcraft represents the attainment of knowledge and science. A candidate learns the symbols of the fraternity and the virtues of silence, secrecy, and fidelity. Here we go. Secrecy. Having an ulterior motive, which is not known by the public. Of course, the Bible forbids such things. In fact, the Baptist Church, shortly after the Civil War, issued pronouncements against Freemasonry, precisely because of these vows of silence and secrecy and fidelity to an organization that is not in the public interest. Okay, I'm going to take a call here from Gerber, who's probably telling me that... hello? Hey. Gerber? Hold on, let me...
Are you on the air?
Okay, sorry for the interruption, folks. Yeah, Gerber, what's up?
You've been on the air? You haven't had no problems?
Oh, really? Okay, because
I'm asking you.
I tried to call in 3 times and it wouldn't let me in.
How long have you been on air?
I 40 minutes now. 40 minutes.
Pardon?
40 minutes.
Oh, okay. Right. Thank you, Pastor Neil. I just thought something was up now.
Okay.
Anyway, all good. God bless.
All right. Okay. If you can set it up so I can call in successfully, please do so. Okay.
Well, but apparently, you have Studio A, right?
Yeah, but I won't let me in. I tried to call.
Oh, are you? You're not in Studio A right now.
No, I'm broadcasting strictly on Eurofolk Radio.
Oh, do you want me to get you in there?
Yeah, set it up and
I'll produce for you.
I'll take a quick break. Okay, very good. Thank you.
All right, I'll pull you in a minute.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
All right, man.
All right, bye.
Bye.
All right, so something wrong at Studio A. Probably somebody asleep at the switch. Some of these people, go through the night. And it's a lot to ask the people to go through the night. But let's continue. And so let me just finish the third degree here. The third degree of Master Mason emphasizes intellectual cultivation, moral control of passions, and the serenity of mind. Sure it does. Sure it does.
Pastor Julian,
okay.
To
be an infiltrator and subversive requires a lot of serenity of mind. I'm sure that's that, but certainly advancement in the in personal affairs and position, status, money. That's what Freemasonry is all about, folks. All right, thank you, Gare Bear. Thank you for connecting me. Let's see. Okay. So you let me know. Send me a message. Make sure. Let me know if we're broadcasting on Revolution Radio. Okay. Just type a message in the chat box here.
Can you hear me?
I'll continue. So, according to Duncan's Masonic Ritual and Monitor, a Master Mason swears on the Bible. Of course, this is a ruse to attract Christians, swears on the Bible a lengthy obligation which includes to always aid and assist all poor, distressed, worthy Master Masons and to fly to his relief upon seeing the grand hailing sign of distress. After the completion of the three Blue Lodge degrees, Freemasonry divides into two branches, the 32-degree York Rite, with its chapter of Royal Arch, and the 33-degree Scottish Rite. In the 9th and 10th degrees of the Scottish Rite, a Mason takes an oath to assist those who struggle against oppression, right? Or, of course, whatever the Freemasons define as oppression. In the 29th and 30th degrees, he vows to wage war against tyranny and despotism, which means all Christian nations. In the 32nd degree, a Scottish Rite Mason swears an obligation as a soldier of freedom. The true Mason is described as an ardent seeker of knowledge who strives, quote, to attain the truth and to serve our fellows, our country, and mankind, unquote. Freemasonry reached America in 1730 when the Grand Lodge of England appointed Daniel Cox, C-O-X-E, of New Jersey as Provincial Grand Master of New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, with authorization to charter lodges. 3 years later, as settlers moved into Georgia, they founded Solomon's Lodge No. 1. Freemasonry quickly flourished in the 13 colonies among the upper class, attracted to the ideas of the European Enlightenment. Okay. The European Enlightenment. Not to Christianity, although there was another lodge, an entirely different Freemasonic group that did dedicate itself to Christianity and was formed in opposition to this branch of Freemasonry. And in fact, those two branches of Freemasonry were fighting it out even as late as 1826, which we'll get to very shortly. Freemasonry quickly flourished in the 13 colonies among the upper class. It had a profound influence on the founding fathers. Yes and no. There were only 3 degrees. And several of the American Masons swore to this that they were not affiliated with the international movement. Freemasons organized the Boston Tea Party. A total of 21 Freemasons signed the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States. George Washington and 32 generals of the Continental Army were Freemasons, yet they were still opposed and fought to the death against British The British, and the British had Freemasons on their side as well. The Great Seal of the United States, depicted on the dollar, contains Masonic symbols, including the all-seeing eye. During the presidency of George Washington, former worshipful master of the Alexandria Lodge in Virginia, the Grand Lodge system appeared in the United States. It emphasized individual state jurisdiction instead of a national governing body. Okay, so we see that Freemasonry was organized to the states instead of federally or internationally. A Grand Lodge could charter its lodges in another state or country lacking its own Grand Lodge and hold jurisdiction until the establishment there of a Grand Lodge. The new fraternity grew rapidly until the William Morgan Affair in 1826. Morgan was a Freemason whose questionable reputation excluded him from joining a new lodge in Batavia, New York. Maybe he was suspicious of what was going on. In retaliation, he announced the intended publication of an exposé of Freemasonry. Provocative articles began appearing in the local Republican Advocate, which later compiled into a book. Morgan's subsequent disappearance stirred the public outcry against Masonry, and it created the anti-Masonic party. John Quincy Adams was the candidate, and he won the presidency as a member of that party. Of course, the mainstream history books are loath. Oh, hold on, folks. I'm going to have to restart.
Hey, but Pastor Ely.
Yes.
Can you hear me now?
I just wanted to say,
I don't know how long you were dead with yes. Studio A, well, but you're okay now.
Okay, very
and,
good.
You can hear me.
Yes.
And I didn't mean to interrupt your show.
That's fine. That's fine. The break is coming up in a few minutes anyway. All right. Thanks for your help, Gerber. Thanks a lot.
I got something to ask you later, too, maybe for your listeners.
All right. Yeah, if you want to join and ask a question, feel free to do so. Okay.
Okay. Thank
All right.
you, Pastor.
Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye. Okay, so folks, this issue of Freemasonry in America is a topic that is rarely discussed in mainstream history, mainstream academia, et cetera, because so many of our political leaders are in fact Freemasons and they don't want you to know. This is the reason. They don't want you to know how powerful Freemasonry is in America today. Okay, so after this outcry, and he doesn't go into detail about the Captain Morgan affair, but the vast majority of lodges closed down after the murder of Captain Morgan, and it was all about Captain Morgan's insistence that the Illuminati was trying to infiltrate the Freemasonic lodges, okay? Because, as I pointed out, the Illuminati only began in May 1st, 1776. That's why all the communist movements and all the arcane movements, the pagan movements, all celebrate May 1st as their holiday. That's the date on which the Illuminati was founded, May 1st, 1776. Okay, so provocative articles began appearing in the local Republican Advocate, which were later compiled into a book. So you see, the Republican Party got its start as an anti-Masonic party. So you see the animosity between the Southern filibusters, who were largely led by Freemasonry, and the Republican Party. You see that animosity starting way back in 1826. A handful of Freemasons were tried and convicted for Morgan's abduction, but his murder or banishment was never ascertained. Of course, the Freemasons would have put the kibosh on any publication of secret information. Many persons, and then you'd be taking your life in your hands, as Mr. Morgan did, because when you join the Freemasonic Lodge, you swear to secrecy, never to reveal their secrets on pain of death. Many persons involved in Whiggery, which Whiggery became a political party, Evangelical crusades and reform movements also rallied against Freemasonry. So you see that a lot of this evangelical movement began in the North as Whiggery, as an attempt to outlaw Freemasonry. And this attempt to outlaw Freemasonry never caught on in the South, because in the South it was so popular and it was leading the filibuster movement. So if you're not aware of the history of Freemasonry in America leading up to the American Civil War, you don't understand the powerful forces that were promoting the slaveocracy in the South. So the anti-Masonic movement and the anti-filibuster movement actually converged in the anti-Masonic party and in the Whig party. Abolitionists John Brown and Charles G. Finney, both former Freemasons, joined anti-Masonic ranks. And as I probably pointed out last time, that there's no doubt that John Brown was financed by the Secret Six, who were in fact Illuminati. Whether or not they were also Freemasons, I have yet to ascertain. But you don't have to be a Freemason to be an Illuminatus. You can join other groups as well. You can be a member of the Communist Party, let's say, and still be an Illuminatus. As, and many times they're both. You can be both a Freemason and a Communist and still be an Illuminatus. All right. So this, in fact, this is the Illuminati was directing the Communist Party, the Communist movement worldwide, and the Freemasons worldwide. Sometimes in cooperation with one another, usually in cooperation, but unbeknownst to the Freemasons and the Communists, that the two movements were actually being orchestrated from the top by the International Jew. So, but John Brown at least publicly renounced Freemasonry. Whether he actually renounced it is another matter. So did New York Whig editors Horace Greeley and Thurlow Weed. Yes, Thurlow Weed, the architect of the Republican machine in New York City. Total corruption. Whig politicians William Seward, Thaddeus Stevens, Charles Sumner, Francis Granger, Daniel Webster, and former President John Quincy Adams, a one-time Mason. So you see, the exposure of Freemasonry as an Illuminati front and people reacting to it was a major movement in America previous to the Civil War. And yet mainstream media and mainstream academia are loath to mention the fact that Freemasonry played such a prominent role in American history in these days. So, Gerber, let me know. I'm not sure if I'm hearing the station. And Gerber is asking me to mention the Bundy trial. Of course, the Bundy family is suing the feds. The BLM in particular, that is not Black Lives Matter, but the Bureau of Land Management, for the assassination of and the false imprisonment of many of the Bundy people in Oregon and Utah, Arizona, etc. I'm not hearing the music. Go ahead.
Waiting for the hi.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Mr. Ailey, but. What I'd like to mention is that they've been incarcerated all this time.
Yes.
And if we don't start standing up, Patrick Aitken is a former host here. She's devoting more time to the being down at the courthouse here in Las Vegas, which is right up the street from me.
Oh, okay.
It's been so hot. I have no excuses, but she says, Jared, there was a lot of people here last week at the courthouse showing support for this family who could be convicted and might, if he gets convicted, might die in prison, the old man. It's all wrong. So she's asked me to step up and try to show up more. But the listeners need to pay attention. And maybe Roger Stone, real quick, let you know, he's trying to get Trump to petition this, I'll be pardoned. Okay. The judge has went really.
He's really anti-Bundy. Crazy. He's anti-Bundy. Okay.
Okay. Imagine. So thank you, all Mr. Right. Ely. You okay. want to grab the server now?
Okay. Very good.
I'll
all
drop
right.
it and you grab it and you got it back. Okay.
All right. Thank you much. Okay. All right, bye folks. We're going to take a quick break. All right. And we'll talk about LaVoy Finicum after the break as well. Oops. Okay. So, all right. Lots of technical problems. It's not EFR's fault today, folks. There's something happening over there. So I am not connected to Revolution Radio at the moment. So Gerber, you'll have to call me back again. Or actually, at this point now, I can probably, since it's break time there, let me try connecting directly to Studio A and see what happens. Because what's happening to the Bundys and the family of LaVoy Finicum is total injustice. And we want to make people aware. Of course, the mass media is not. All right, we're connected to Studio.
Hello, my name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion. You can find me on Studio B every Thursday at 1700 hours Pacific Time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. No topic taboo, no subject too strange. I strive to take a neutral standpoint during the dissection of the topic at hand. That's Reality Extraction with Mr. Rowe on Revolution Radio.
Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, 6 to 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We are your hosts, Pamela
and Claire, on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Featuring the public law to us, Lyme disease
and astrology. Witnessing those who harm and holding them accountable.
Guess what? No more secrets. It's about time we snap out of it. This corporate government is a house of cards falling in on itself. The public law. Do no harm.
Oscar's freeze. That's your cerebral cortex looking for an answer it doesn't have.
See? Even your brain knows you're screwed.
Your belly's filling with adrenaline right now. Whether you know it or not. Your heart's beating fast. It's getting a little harder to breathe. The neurobiological system is telling it to run. But your knees are too weak to move.
Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. And do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener-supported radio. Reporting the danger, unafraid, right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution. Revolution radio.
To the Divine Truth every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time with Taj, Sarah Adams, and Nissa Norton. We present a genuine and authentic show with discussions and interviews with the people that matter in the alternative community. We ask the questions that nobody else will ask. the greatest minds of the alternative community every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, in Studio A. We talk about everything from the Illuminati to the secret space program, multidimensional warfare, aliens and UFOs, mind control, and sacred hidden knowledge. The divine truth, exposing the truth without the fear, every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Restoration Hour. I'm your host, Pastor Eli James. And following Jer Bear's suggestion, yes, this is, again, it's kibosh news. They put the kibosh on real news. And we at Eurofolk Radio and Revolution Radio, we're covering the Bundy standoff and the assassination of Lavoie Finicum with regularity. And now it's become a court case. And I especially, I think I was the first one to report on Hillary Clinton getting money, millions of dollars from Russia, donated to the Clinton Foundation in exchange for the rights to mine uranium in Nevada or Oregon. I forget exactly which state it was. So, you know, all the mainstream media talks about is the fact that a couple of Trump's associates had meetings with some Russians, and they're attempting to parlay this as a conspiracy against Hillary Clinton, when Hillary Clinton herself has been the beneficiary of, and I reported, I think I was the only one reporting on this, that Hillary Clinton herself was a beneficiary of millions of dollars from the Russians. Mainstream media refuses to touch the subject, okay? Now from the Las Vegas Sun, Bundy refuses in court to recognize U.S. authority in Nevada. No national coverage of this at all that I'm aware of. Jailed Nevada rancher Cliven Bundy questioned the legitimacy of federal authorities and declined to enter a plea in U.S. court Thursday to criminal charges that he had led an armed standoff against a roundup of cattle 2 years ago. Now, of course, this is referring to BLM. Not Black Lives Matter, but the Bureau of Land Management illegally occupying a state park. So that state park is for the citizens of the state, not to be used by federal troops. The local sheriffs, many of them are on the side of the Bundys in this matter, and it's overreaching the federal authority of the Bureau of Land Management. That's what the real issue is. And the Bundys are an absolute constitutional right here. Absolute constitutional right. After several minutes of confusion about whether Bundy had a lawyer, U.S. Magistrate Judge Carl Hoffman entered a not guilty plea on Bundy's behalf and scheduled a detention hearing on March 17th. Well, the Bundys are not guilty. Next, I think Bundy is saying, yeah, you don't have jurisdiction here. This should be a state matter. Next, and the BLM should be on trial, not the Bundys, especially for the murder of Lavoie Finicum. Finicum took a shot right in the heart, and whoever fired that shot is guilty of murdering Lavoie Finicum, who had his hands up, unlike Michael Brown. Next week's hearing will focus on whether Bundy 69 should remain in custody before a potential trial on 16 charges, including conspiracy, assault and threatening a federal officer, and obstruction. Of course, none of these things are true. It could be many months before trial. Of course, the feds need plenty of time to fabricate their case. Federal prosecutor Stephen Meyer, M-Y-H-R-E, told the judge the case involving 19 defendants would be slow-tracked as complex, indeed, because they need just as much time as the evolutionists require to prove evolution. So, folks, this is where it stands, and thanks for the hint, Jerbear. I will do more reporting on this because this is a big deal. And from nodisinfo.com, the Jewish mob and the murder of Lavoy Finicum. A man was slaughtered, Lavoy Finicum, by Zionist agents and their collaborators who then lied about it for purposes of obfuscation. Essentially, it was portrayed, quote, it was a shootout, right? Well, one guy had his hands up. That's a shootout? I don't think so, folks. And incredibly, it was a traffic stop that led to the so-called shootout. There was no such shootout. Such an event implies two groups shooting at each other. The man was struck by multiple bullets until he was killed outright. He fired no shots in return and didn't even pick up or hold a weapon, and that is correct. We reported on this false news, fake news, that the mass media was portraying this as a shootout. This is all an elaborate disguise. Doesn't say who the author of this piece is here, but this is from nodisinfo.com. In fact, it was the Jewish mob who ganged up on Lavoy Finicum and perpetrated his death. Moreover, it was because of the precise actions of this mob that there was a public protest against the overreaching tyrannical actions of the so-called federal government. It was the actions of Jewish criminal minds that led to the protest. That is, through such provocation, make no mistake about it. Yes, I would agree with this analysis by No Disinfo entirely. Okay, so that's what's going on. That's why there's no national media about this trial. And that's why we in the independent media need to take up the cause and tell the truth about what's going on in Las Vegas, Nevada, and out west between the ranchers and the BLM. And although I have no direct evidence that George Soros is financing the Bureau of Land Management, he is directly financing Black Lives Matter. But it's just another Jewish operation, folks. That's all it is. It's just another Jewish operation. So here we see that, and I wouldn't doubt that the Freemasons are involved in this as well, because Freemasons are heavily involved in the police forces. I know this from personal experience. I know this from personal experience, folks. Several policemen have admitted to me that they're Freemasons. I was involved in a traffic stop going through Tennessee. This was when I was with the Klan, and our driver was speeding. He got pulled over. And we asked him outright, are you a Freemason? He said, yes. And he admitted to us that many of the officers were Freemasons. So you can see the influence of Freemasonry in law enforcement is heavy. It is very heavy, folks. If it's true in Tennessee, it's true in other areas. And so, which means Jewish control of our police forces, more directly even by the ADL. The ADL sends police officers to Israel for training in crowd control and people control, teaches them what they can get away with legally as police officers in terms of killing people. Of course, Black Lives Matter is not interested in this. They don't want to know about Jews having officers kill blacks and others. Actually, more white people are killed by police officers in America than blacks. It's another fact most people don't know. So disinformation from mainstream media is what we're all about, exposing it. And, you know, we'll do more about this in future episodes because this is an important trial, folks. It's a very important trial. But as the prosecutor himself said, this could take a long time, folks, because they have no case against the Bundys. So they need much time. They need a few billion years in evolutionary terms to concoct the case against the Bundys, who are absolutely in the right. Okay. So, getting back let me pick up where I left off. So we see that the Whig Party and the Republican Party both began an opposition to Freemasonry, and many of the early Whigs and Republicans were anti-Masons, okay, such as Horace Greeley, Thurlow Weed, William H. Seward, Thaddeus Stevens, Charles Sumner, Francis Granger, Daniel Webster, President John Quincy Adams, etc. Future Whig presidents William Henry Harrison, who was assassinated, Zachary Taylor, Ann Miller, and I believe assassinated by the Freemasons, Zachary Taylor, Millard Fillmore, were also anti-Masons. The latter characterized the fraternity as organized treason. That's what these presidents thought of Masonry. The excitement that spread nationwide against secret societies, fueled by the rise of 150 anti-Masonic newspapers in 16 states, gave birth to the anti-Masonic party. And I'm sure many of my listeners have never even heard of the anti-Masonic party. It's been written out of the official history books, folks. It ran presidential candidate William Wirt, W-I-R-T, in the 1832 elections, who won only in Vermont. The anti-Masonic party, attracting mostly farmers and limited by its narrow focus, dissolved in 1836. Attacks against the fraternity continued for another decade, dividing families, churches, schools, and communities. Thousands of Freemasons publicly disavowed their affiliation. The 500 lodges in New York shriveled to 49. And this was as a direct result of the Captain Morgan affair and the resulting outcry. Although Mississippi Grand Master John Quitman, who was a major general in the American Civil War, or leading up to the Civil War, I should say, a major filibuster, having organized many filibusters himself, erroneously assumed that Northern anti-Masonic sentiment would not reach the South. Half of the 16 lodges in his state were extinct by 1833. 6 years later, there were only 6 lodges left in Georgia, with a total of 430 members. But all this did was force the Freemasons to go deeper underground, and it's real obvious that Freemasonry rebounded, just as the Illuminati rebounded in Europe after the plans of the Illuminati were made available to all the governments when the Illuminati courier, was struck by lightning, and the contents of his satchel, which was the plans of the Illuminati to overthrow all established Christian governments, were made public. But the presence of Freemasons in those governments prevented the necessary action to eliminate Freemasonry altogether. Freemasonry also languished in the Spanish colony of Cuba due to different causes. The 1738 papal bull of Clement XII denounced Freemasons as heretics and rebels. Of course, Clement XII and his Jesuits he believed in Jesuitry, not Freemasonry. And of course, Freemasonry was an avowed enemy of the Roman Catholic Church. In these days, although there were secret agreements between the Jesuits and the Freemasons as well, because sometimes criminals work together if they have a common cause. For much of a century, some monarchs and the Inquisition of the Catholic Church persecuted their activities. So did Adolf Hitler. There was a brief respite in 1767 when the Count of Aranda, Pedro Abarca, Prime Minister of Charles III, was elected Masonic Grand Master of Spain and proceeded to banish the Jesuits. So you can see how high the Freemasons got up in the ranks of Spain. Prime Minister Pedro Abarca, Count of Aranda, Prime Minister of Spain under Charles III. The first Masonic Lodge in Havana, Theological Virtues Lodge No. 103, was chartered by the Grand Lodge of Pennsylvania in 1804. The Masonic doctrine of liberty, equality, and fraternity for the freeborn quickly spread among the upper class. Not all Spanish Catholics were happy with Spanish rule. There was further Masonic expansion after Freemason Napoleon Bonaparte. Yep, that Napoleon Bonaparte gave the Spanish throne to his brother Joseph in 1807. The Grand Lodges of Louisiana and South Carolina then sponsored new lodges in Cuba. You see how powerful Freemasonry was in these days, folks? Yet, nary a mention of the Freemasons in the official history books. Just as the propaganda duo in Italy, who put John the 23rd on the throne in 1963, no mention of John of 23 being a Freemason. Not in the popular press, folks. Yes, I have published a photograph of John the 23rd while he was still a cardinal, in having a membership meeting with Propaganda Douay, all sitting around with him at the center before he became Pope. This was part of the official war between the Jesuits and the Freemasons, which today, are, you know, the Jews control the Jesuits and the Freemasons both. There's no doubt about this. Many of the Jesuits have become communists, promoting communism in Central America and around the world. So the Grand Lodges of Louisiana and South Carolina then sponsored new lodges in Cuba. These transferred their allegiance in 1821 to the First Grand Lodge of Cuba. 2 years later, 66 Masonic lodges were active in Cuba. So the attempt to wipe America clean of Freemasonry by the anti-Masonic party, the Whigs, and the Republicans failed. Because it's really hard to eradicate a secret society. They just go deeper underground. The first conspiracy for Cuban independence occurred in 1810, in the Theological Virtues Lodge, number 3 in Havana, 103. The three members, Roman de la Luz, Luis F. Basave, and Joaquin Infante, were charged with attempted insurrection and deported to Spain. In 1823, Cuban Freemasons created the clandestine independence movement Soles Irayos de Bolivar. Yes, Bolivar. Simon Bolivar was also a Freemason. They sent a delegation of six brethren to meet with liberator and Freemason Simon Bolivar in Colombia and with Mexican independence leaders who belonged to the fraternity, requesting help to overthrow the colonial government. Now, of course, Bolivar accepted the assistance of Freemasonry to become the president of Bolivia. However, popular sentiment against Freemasonry ultimately forced him to disavow his connection with Freemasonry, as same as many of our presidents had to do once ascending to the throne. They can't be supporting a subversive society. And by the way, these Freemasons, once they consider a former member to be a traitor, they will not hesitate to assassinate him. They attempted to assassinate James Buchanan, but he realized that he was poisoned and he sought medical assistance right away, and his life was spared. So, but James Buchanan knew that the Freemasons tried to poison him. And he left the, that's why he left the affair of Fort Sumter to Abraham Lincoln, who was not a Freemason. I don't think Abraham Lincoln was even aware of the power of the Freemasons, although he was aware of the power of the Jesuits, most assuredly. Lincoln was aware of the power of the Jesuits and the Roman Catholic support for slavery. So let's continue here. The group included 20-year-old Gaspar Betancourt Cisneros, who later figured prominently in the filibuster movement. So you have these very powerful politicians and rich people, most of them aristocrats, supporting the filibuster movement. Bolivar told the Cuban delegation that the moment was not ripe for their plans. Here Bolivar was beginning to disassociate from, although he was elevated with the help of Freemasons, he eventually gave it up. Because you can't rule a country through secrecy. You just can't. The following year, King Ferdinand VII, who had been deposed by Masonic military officers in 1820, returned to power in Spain and ordered Freemasons to abjure or be summarily hung for treason. Just like Hitler. Okay. The fraternity went underground in Spain and Cuba and was subjected to new persecutions in 1848, just like the Murano Jews a couple of centuries earlier, entailing property confiscations and exile banishments. A decade later, all lodges in Cuba had closed except two. Their members met infrequently under fictitious names at various locations. A group of Cuban Freemasons and former independence conspirators created the Havana Club in the spring of 1848. Its members were mainly aristocrats and sugar planters, some of whom partly feared that the abolitionist policies being pressured in Spain by England and France would ruin Cuba's sugar economy. All right, so they wanted independence from Spain to get around the British and French pressure on Spain, which they would, of course, reject. The organization agreed to hire 5,000 American-Mexican War veterans to invade the island and overthrow the colonial regime. This is filibustering, folks. Totally illegal. Totally illegal. Another separatist conspiracy led by General Narciso Lopez had been brewing in the central Trinidad region of Cuba for over a year. Lopez had a very prominent general. He was a general of the Spanish army, and he's the one who led the insurrection. Lopez had risen to prominence in Spain during the Carlist War and the 1840 revolt of liberal and Masonic army officers led by General Baldomero Espiritu, who was regent until overthrown in 1843. See what happens when you get involved in Freemasonry? It's one revolution after another, one insurrection after another, one conspiracy after another. Under Espartero, Lopez was appointed president of the Executive and Permanent Military Commission in Cuba and also governor of Trinidad Province. This is all done by military insurrection, folks. After the fall of Espartero, Lopez was quickly cashiered, motivating him to plot against the government. I don't know what he means by cashiered, but outed at least. The Lopez conspiracy was discovered on July 4th, 1848, after the arrests of some of his followers, prompting him to flee to the United States 3 days later, where he organized a filibuster from America. Or I should say, the South. Because only Southerners were interested in filibustering. And now I'm starting to name some of the conspirators who eventually got involved in the partition of the North and South in conjunction with and working for the Rothschilds. Some of these people were conscious co-conspirators with the Rothschilds in order to disunify the United States using slavery as the division. The Cubans then offered the leadership of the expedition to Mexican War volunteer General Caleb Cushing. Caleb Cushing. Rothschild agent and a northerner. A Freemason and former Massachusetts Whig representative. So, Caleb Cushing, whether he's using his Whig status as a front, or whether he was sincerely anti-Masonic, his future career proved otherwise. He was not sincere. He was a disunionist. Of course, you never know whether a person is sincere, legitimate, or an operative spewing rhetoric to curry favor until you look at his entire career, and Caleb Cushing was definitely a conspirator. In December 1848, Cushing introduced Gonzales to outgoing President James K. Polk and members of his cabinet. All right, so Cushing was definitely a conspirator here. Freemasonry provided a common link between Gonzales, Cushing, Polk, Vice President George M. Dallas, Secretary of State to James Buchanan, and Secretary of the Navy, John Y. Mason. James Buchanan was the Secretary of State at this time. So all of these people were involved in, as I reported earlier, James Buchanan was involved in Freemasonry and in filibustering before he became president and had to disavow it and condemn it. So you can see all these high-ranking people who were conspiring against the Union as advocates of filibustering. I'm sure many of you have never been aware of how big and important filibustering was in the South and what the ramifications were in the North, where the vast majority of Northerners were utterly opposed to filibustering. And this was one of the main reasons they were opposed to slavery, because of the criminal enterprise that these people, most of whom were Freemasons, were engaged in. This was a criminal syndicate, folks. Filibustering was run by a criminal syndicate of Freemasons and aristocratic landowners and aristocratic ex-generals, etc., etc., etc. Cushing was forced to return to Massachusetts due to his father's terminal illness and declined the Cuban expedition offer. But the fact that he was offered it at all shows you his true allegiances. Gonzales remained, and the name of Caleb Cushing will feature prominently as an orchestrator of disunion in both the North and the South. He organized the disunionists in both camps, proving that he was an agent of the Rothschilds. Gonzales remained in Washington, where he met politicians sympathetic to the Cuban cause, that is the cause of promoting slavery in Cuba, including Northern Democratic Senator Stephen Douglas of Illinois and Daniel Dickinson of New York. Dickinson and Douglas were prominent Freemasons. Gonzales returned to New York City, where in June 1849 he participated in a Cuban conspiratorial meeting in a boarding house with Lopez and his followers. They incorporated Masonic emblems and the design of their flag and agreed to use the red, white, and blue tricolor of liberty, which is not the same as the U.S. flag. Old Glory. Master Mason Miguel Tuerbe Tolon drew three oblong horizontal blue stripes separated by two white stripes to represent the three regions into which Spain divided Cuba. Wow, that sounds like the flag of Chicago. Lopez superimposed on the banner's left an equilateral triangle resembling a Master Mason's apron. Quote, For besides its Masonic significance, it is also a striking geometrical figure, unquote. Oh, yeah, triangle. Striking figure. It's also a musical instrument. This is getting comical, folks. But it shows you the extent to which the Freemasons were involved in filibustering and turning the South into a slaveocracy. I'll bet you never realized. You are listening to the Restoration Hour. I'm your host, Pastor Eli James, and you're getting the skinny, the poop, the dope, the truth, the info, the scuttlebutt, and everything else that's worthwhile in knowing the truth about Freemasonry in America and the connivances of the Jews and the Illuminati in trying to destroy the American Republic on behalf of the international Jew banksters. You're not going to get this information anywhere else but from yours truly. So tell everybody you know about Eurofolk Radio, about Revolution Radio, and go to the main website, www.freedomslips.com, and make as generous a donation as you can, because freedom of speech is more precious than rubies, diamonds, gold, silver, etc. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. But the rabbis who heard, to whom Yahshua spoke these words, said, "We're already free. What are you talking to us about freedom? We were never captive to any man." Thereby proving that they were Edomites, not Israelites. Here again, you see the Judeo-Christian churches leave out the good stuff. You know, they'll quote that verse, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free," but they'll never go into the details of John 7 and 8. And that this was a direct, Yahshua baited the Edomites into admitting their true genealogy, namely Edomite-Canaanite genealogy. But that's a subject for another day. Nevertheless, if you believe in freedom of speech, and the truth comes from insider sources as well, they reveal a lot of stuff that they didn't mean to, and many disgruntled Freemasons and many disgruntled Jews will, for their own personal reasons, will reveal things that the Jews, that the hierarchy of Jewry does not want us to know. And so it's important to dig up this kind of information. A disgruntled Freemason or a disgruntled Jew is often a gold mine of information. So let's get back to this study here, where you are finding out the tremendous role of Jews and Freemasons in the uncivil war that resulted. So they're promoting Masonic symbols on their flag. Anybody who has eyes to see, understand. And ears to hear, understand. But he rejected placing the Masonic all-seeing eye in the center of the triangle, as it was difficult to embroider, plus it would be too obvious. Instead, they used the five-pointed star of the Texas flag because it also carries a symbolic meaning, representing the Masonic five points of fellowship. In early July 1849, recruitment for the invasion of Cuba was openly promoted in New York, Boston, Baltimore, and New Orleans. Freemasons everywhere. Soldiers of fortune everywhere. People looking for easy bucks, although taking a great risk. Some 400 unarmed filibusters, including many Mexican War veterans, departed New Orleans and assembled on Round Island, 3 miles south of Pascagoula, Mississippi. When President Zachary Taylor learned of these events, he issued a proclamation on August 11th against the quote-unquote criminal invasion of Cuba and ordered the Navy to blockade the island. During the next 2 months, the expeditionaries were allowed to disperse without being arrested. Which shows you the influence that Freemasons had with the federal government. 2 months later, Gonzales met John Henderson at a White House levee on December 21, 1849. Henderson, a former Mississippi Whig senator, brigadier general of the state militia, and Freemason, was a political ally of Mississippi Governor John Quitman and had played a great part in Texas annexation. John Henderson. That's a new one to me. I haven't heard his name before. At Henderson's invitation, the Cuban revolutionaries moved their base of operations to New Orleans, where Henderson kept the law. That's, by the way, where Judah P. Benjamin moved to coordinate efforts. Judah P. Benjamin being a direct agent of the Rothschilds, directly in charge of the Southern secession movement. Lopez, all right, where Henderson kept the law office. Lopez went to reside in the home of attorney Laurent Sigur, S-I-G-U-R, editor of the New Orleans Delta newspaper, whose father had been the founding worshipful master of the Perfect Union Lodge No. 1, the first Masonic temple established in Louisiana in 1794. So you see, filibustering and Freemasonry and the Jews, B'nai B'rith, the Rothschilds, joined at the hip, folks. Joined at the hip. Henderson also introduced Lopez and Gonzales to Quitman at the Executive Mansion in Jackson, Mississippi on March 15, 1850. Quitman was governor of the state of Mississippi at the time. The visitors exchanged a Masonic greeting with their hosts. The governor, regarded as the father of Mississippi Masonry, that is John Quitman, became a master mason in Hiram Lodge No. 18 in Delaware, Ohio in 1820. Why are all these northern Freemasons moving south to promote filibustering? That's the question you have to ask. Why are all these northern Masons moving south to promote filibustering? Could it be because this was remarkably profitable before the Civil War? Half the millionaires in America lived in Natchez, Mississippi. That's the entire Union. Half the millionaires lived in Natchez, Mississippi, and they were all slave owners. So you can see that this enormous potential for wealth, for becoming a millionaire, is what attracted these northern Masons south of the border, or south of the Mason-Dixon line, and, of course, south of the border as well, where they wanted to increase the slaveocracy over other nations by military invasion. With or without the support of the federal government, with or without the support of the state government. So, John Quitman was regarded as the father of Mississippi Masonry, and he became a Mason. Hiram, of course, Hiram Abiff is the real patriarch, a putative patriarch of Freemasonry, the one who built the original, according to the Masons themselves, the original lodge way back yonder in King Solomon's time. So he was a northerner from Delaware, Ohio, who eventually moved south. He was Grand Sovereign of Southwest, Grand Inspector General of the 33rd degree of the Southern Division of the United States for the state of Mississippi, and a founder of the Supreme Council. He was also an honorary member of the Grand Lodge of South Carolina and the Grand Lodge of his native New York. So, Freemasons don't have any influence? Freemasonry is a non-subject? Not worthy of historians, as all of these academics will tell you? I don't think so, folks. I think the subject of Freemasonry is of ultimate importance to understanding history. Without understanding the secret, and of course, we don't know about their secret involvement until after the fact, but it's the trail of their actions which proves their subversiveness. Quitman had been elected Grand Master of his state from 1826 to 1838, guiding the fraternity through the turbulent anti-Masonic era. There was rapid Masonic expansion when Quitman was again re-elected Grand Master in 1840, 1845, and 1846, when he departed for the Mexican War. So you can see the Mexican War was a Freemasonic Knights of the Golden Circle operation, pro-slavery. In his honor, American troops established the Quitman UD Lodge in Veracruz, Mexico, in 1847. And there were a lot of Freemasons in Mexico. Essentially, a Freemason is a revolutionary, guided by the Illuminati, whether he realizes it or not. There were also a Quitman Lodge, number 76, in New Orleans, and a Quitman Lodge, number 106, in Richmond, Georgia. By 1850, Masonic lodges had increased in Mississippi to almost 100. So, as I said earlier, the anti-Masonic movement begun, which led to the Republican Party and the anti-Masonic Party and to the Whig Party, ultimately failed. Why? Because it was so profitable to be a slaveocracy leader. So immensely profitable, the temptation was too great, even for white people. So there was also the Lodge number one, Quitman Lodge 106. It was in Ringgold, Georgia. By 1850, Masonic lodges had increased in Mississippi to almost 100. Membership in the fraternity had also regained a similar increase throughout the nation. So Masonry was on the rebound, well on the rebound before the Civil War, and Masonry was largely responsible for the Civil War. I'll bet you didn't know this. Also attending the meeting with the Cubans were the three justices of the Mississippi High Court of Errors and Appeals, Chief Justice William L. Sharkey, Judge Coatsworth Pinckney Smith. Mr. Smith was named after Charles Coatsworth Pinckney, who was the secretary of the Constitutional Convention, and Judge Samuel S. Boyd. The first two were Freemasons. Sharkey was made a Master Mason in 1825 in Washington Lodge No. 3, where Henderson was affiliated. The judges provided legal opinions on circumventing the federal neutrality law. So here you see the Masonic Convention, the conspiracy against the law of 1818, which prohibited private filibustering operations, attacking sovereign nations who were not at war with the United States. So you can see the Masons were involved in subversion. Quitman concluded that after the Cuban people revolted for independence, the Cuban people with the help of the Masons, right? He would resign as governor and lead an expedition to reinforce Lopez. He agreed to meet the Cubans in New Orleans on a fortnight for a secret purpose. So here you have the governor of Mississippi being an open advocate, not just an advocate, but actually involved militarily in filibustering operations in total violation of the law of 1818. And of course, he was a Freemason. Don't tell me that Freemasonry isn't an important subject. Freemasons occupied the highest positions in the military command structure, starting with Lopez, Gonzalez, and Quitman. Chatham Robert O. Wheat, a New Orleans attorney and Mexican War veteran, organized and commanded the Louisiana Regiment. His reason for joining, according to his father, was not only from universal feelings of philanthropy. How can slavery be construed as philanthropy? Well, I guess we're invading those corrupt Spanish colonialists. But the fact that they held slaves was not part of their immorality, because these same people wanted to promote slavery as a business of their own. Not only from universal feelings of philanthropy, but for the patriotic purpose of aggrandizing the South. Now we're getting somewhere. Aggrandizing in the name of the South, Freemasonry, and the slavocracy. Now, there's an honest word spoken by a Freemason. Aggrandizing the South. This latter consideration was pressed by several prominent Southern statesmen, his Mason personal friend. Yeah, you can get rich being a slave owner. Colonel Peter Smith, a Freemason and the son of Judge Coatsworth Pinckney Smith, and Major William J. Bunch, a Mexican War veteran, raised the Mississippi Regiment. Colonels Theodore O'Hara and Thomas Theodore Hawkins, both Mexican War veterans, headed the Kentucky Regiment. The latter was a member of Mount Moriah Lodge, number 106, in Louisville. This is taboo information, folks. You're not supposed to know these things. Again, you can go online and find this document, which is well worth reading. Filibusters and Freemasons, The Sworn Obligation, by Antonia Della Cova, C-O-V-A, from the Journal of the Early Republic, Spring 1997, Volume 17. I think you're getting the picture of how important Freemasonry was to disunion of the American Republic. And Abraham Lincoln was the only politician who stood adamantly for the Union against these conspirators. And that same Abraham Lincoln is being demonized by the neo-Confederates, who are nothing but apologists for the Freemasons. Likewise, the neo-abolitionists, who are also nothing but apologists for the Freemasons and the Jews, maintaining a false narrative. Both sides, the neo-abolitionists and the neo-Confederates, both say that Abraham Lincoln was an abolitionist and an amalgamationist. So I can understand why a Southerner today, hearing supposedly both sides of the issue, which he's not getting both sides of the issue at all he's getting is Freemasonic sides of the issue. When he hears both the Sons of the Confederacy and neo-abolitionists proclaiming that Abraham Lincoln was an amalgamationist and an abolitionist, well, you can understand why he believes that lie. He thinks he's getting it from both sides. Even blacks say, oh, Abraham Lincoln, Emancipation Proclamation. Yeah, he freed the slaves, but he was not an abolitionist up until his dying day. Abraham Lincoln was freeing the blacks to go back to Africa and other places, not to be amalgamated into our society. The neo-Confederates will simply not tell you this, neither will the neo-abolitionists. So you're getting propaganda from both sides. Both sides are protecting the Jews and the Freemasons by covering up their role in the American Civil War, among other things. General Jean-Baptiste Donatien Augustin, commander of the Louisiana Legion, a state militia regiment, provided most of the weapons for the expedition. Where did a guy like this get the money to provide the weapons for 4,000 or 5,000 people? Where did he get the money for this? Augustine requisitioned the arms from the state arsenal in exchange for a $7,500 surety bond. So, he got the arms from a state arsenal. And he put up a $7,500 surety bond. Well, that is if the expedition succeeds, big money to be made, and he'll pay the state back. Who allowed this to happen? Contributors to the bond included attorney John Henderson, notary public A.A. Baudoin, and Albert F. Fabre, superintendent of the French Quarter Public Schools. No stranger to slavery. By the way, the culture of New Orleans was three-tiered because it was originally controlled by the French. I think the French took it away from the Spaniards. And the French had no qualms about race mixing. No qualms whatsoever. Liberty, equality, fraternity. That's your Freemasonic cry of racial integration. Liberty, equality, as in that middle word there, equality, fraternity. Fraternity is we are secret and we don't tell you what we're up to. You'll have to find it out for yourself. And the only liberty they avow is liberty for Freemasons. So you see the damage that this organization, Freemasonry, has done to planet Earth and to Christian civilization. I'm just scratching the surface. I'm just talking about their involvement in the American Civil War and filibustering. The damage Freemasonry has done is humongous, and it continues today. And it gets worse. All of these Freemasons should be rounded up and prosecuted and hung. The vast majority of them are guilty of treason, child molestation, child sacrifice, etc., etc., etc. And many of them are in control of the media. The Jews like to employ Freemasons because they know the Freemasons will keep their mouths shut. Henderson was a Mississippi Freemason, while Augustine, Baudoin, and Fabre were members of the Perfect Union Lodge No. 1 in New Orleans, which had been founded by the Elder Segur. Quitman arrived in the Crescent City on April 26 and worked covertly with his political contacts and Masonic brethren to help the filibusters. The state of Mississippi provided 50 Jaeger model Mississippi rifles loaded on board the expedition vessels before they sailed out of New Orleans. Lopez and 521 expeditionaries landed in Cardenas, Cuba. So this was a relatively small expedition, only 521 men bearing arms. In the early hours of May 19th, they captured the town after a skirmish with Spanish troops, resulting in three filibusters killed and nine wounded, including Gonzales. Well, this is what happens when you get involved in revolution. Okay, take one call. We're just about out of time. Area code 133 or 336. Hello, you're on the air?
Hello? All right.
Yes, hello. You have a very limited amount of time. Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, Pastor Eli. Before the end of the show, real quick, I just wanted to say something I don't think I've mentioned on your show before. Okay. But real quick, it made everything click when I heard this one guy say this one term. I first of all, you should know I learned about Freemasonry maybe 10, 15 years ago.
Okay.
But I didn't really start learning about, you know, the truth about the Jews or whatever,
right.
The Jewish conspiracy, until about a year and a half ago, maybe.
Okay.
Well, I heard this phrase a few months back, and it's like a light bulb went off. All he said was all Freemasonry is Judaism for the Gentile.
All right.
And God
very
dang,
good.
Everything clicked.
Who said that? Who said that?
I don't know. I'll have to find the video, but
okay.
Man, that's a term to coin.
Yes, very good. Yeah, and then the French Revolution, somebody said of it, it's too much Manischewitz wine in mason jars, right? So what was that? Judaism or Freemasonry is nothing but Judaism for the Gentiles.
Yes.
That's the clue.
And it is, man. It totally makes sense if you more than research the subject for more than an hour.
Yeah. And it shows that these notions were popular. You know, people knew these things in those days, but this history is all covered up for the obvious reason. Right? All right.
All right. Well, okay. Let's go. Hey, thanks for the good show.
Thank you very much. That was great info. Thank you. I hadn't heard that expression before. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. All right. So, folks, we'll do more on this because it's such an important subject. You need to know the Freemasons involved in filibustering and slavery. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh, pass the ammunition. See you next time. In Vietnam, a long time ago, I was a soldier who was made to go. I was a young man, but did I know? A long time ago, I was on my knees, not even innocent. I was a young man, what did I know? Can you imagine being 19 or 20, wearing jungle fire tees? Now you're the enemy. If you were shot at, would you say him or me? Well, that was bad enough, but when I got home, they treated me like dirt, a bum on the road. I can't tell you how it hurt when she hung up the phone. And I still have nightmares all that late. And what's worse, I have daymares every day. I was scarred for life, yes, you might say. Well, I'm a Vietnam man and I got so much to say. One day I got a letter.